It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Earlier this month, the unemployment numbers were announced. Over 200,000 jobs were added to the economy. While this is good news, why do so many people feel we're still in a recession? Joining us for a look at the unemployment numbers and how the reporting of them has changed is Robert Morris University economics professor Brian O'Rourke. Brian O'Rourke, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be back.
What is the current unemployment rate in the United States?
That's sort of a trick question, I think.
That's why it's in there.
It's different depending on what set of data you look at. And that's one of the things that we hear reported is something called the U3 unemployment number. That's the sort of the headline number. So that number just came out. It was up a tick to 5.7%. But if you look at some other measures of unemployment, you get some, in some cases, wildly differing numbers as to how we count unemployment, who counts as being unemployed. And, it's a number that doesn't really fit into a real nice, neat box.
So this may sound a bit naive, but who are the unemployed? Who makes up the ranks of the unemployed?
Okay, that's not naive at all. It's actually a question that when I talk to my students about how do we calculate unemployment, they just look at me almost with mouths agape thinking, you can't be serious. Because usually we think of people who are unemployed as people who don't have jobs, and that's not necessarily the case. When we count unemployment in the United States, what we do is we take a look at whether you have a job. If you have a job of any kind, you're counted as employed. If you don't have a job, then there's a series of questions that are asked about why you don't have a job, how long has it been since you looked for a job. And so if you want to be counted as unemployed, technically speaking, you need to be looking for work within the last 4 weeks from when you are asked about whether or not you have a job. So when we look at who is unemployed, we're looking at a segment of the population who have to fit certain criteria.
So it doesn't necessarily mean somebody who isn't working.
That's exactly right. That's the weird part of how we calculate unemployment. So someone who is without a job is not unemployed unless they are looking for a job. That's the technical definition of how we calculate unemployment. And this gets into some sort of gory details about whether or not you're even part of the labor force. And I think that's where a lot of confusion really arises.
And who is counting the unemployed? And how do they determine the numbers?
Okay, so one of the jobs of the Bureau of Labor Statistics is to count the unemployed in the United States. And the usual way of doing this is to conduct a survey. So it's not like we're going out and asking everybody, do you have a job or not? The BLS conducts this thing called the Current Population Survey, where they survey 60,000 households in the United States. And the way it works is they either show up at your door or they call you, with your permission, of course. They don't just sort of knock on your door at random. They show up and they ask a question. They ask you a series of questions about what's your employment status, what's the employment status of the people in your household. They want to know about ages and sort of intent to find work. And so the first sort of stage or the first set of steps in asking these questions is to find out who you are. So they want to know, first of all, if you're part of the civilian population. So right away, if you're in the military, you are no longer considered part of the official labor force for this particular number. They want to know what your age is, because if you're under 16, you're not part of the labor force for this particular number. They want to know things about whether or not you have anybody in the household who's institutionalized. So this includes hospital, includes being in jail. If you are, then you are most likely not part of the labor force anymore, whether you have a job or not. And so then they go about asking questions about, are you in school? If you're a full-time student over the age of 16, usually you're left out of the labor force. And so questions then progress as to, well, if you are not one of these categories, where do you fall? Do you have a job? If you are, you're employed. If you don't have a job, are you looking for a job? Are you retired? If you're not looking for a job, you don't count as unemployed, even though you don't have a job. If you're a housewife and you're not being paid, you are not unemployed. If you haven't looked for work in the last 4 weeks, you are no longer unemployed. And so there's all kinds of different categories that the Bureau of Labor Statistics can put you in to determine whether or not you are employed or unemployed.
And does this really make sense? I mean, isn't there a better way to measure the unemployment numbers?
Well, you would think so, because let's sort of put this in context. Let's say the Bureau of Labor Statistics calls you up and you agree to participate in the current population survey. And they come to your house and they ask, all right, well, who's in your household and who are they? Well, I've got two kids who are under the age of 16. Okay, they're out of the labor force. You know, my father lives with me. He's retired. He's not looking for work. Okay, he's part of the labor force, but he's not employed or unemployed. Oh, so he's not part of the labor force because he's not either one of those things. My wife's in jail, so she's not part of the labor force. And you know, I've got this 18-year-old son, and he's just a no-good deadbeat. He's not doing anything. Well, is he looking for work? Well, he says he's looking for work. Okay, he's unemployed. Do you have a job? Yes, I have a job. So in that household, there are two people in the labor force. One is unemployed and one is employed. Now, if the 18-year-old decides to quit looking for work because he can't find the job that he wants, he wants a management position or something like that, and it's not going to get one. So he quits looking. Now he's no longer unemployed. He's not involved in the labor force, which is sort of curious because he doesn't have a job. And it's not that he can't work. He just isn't looking. So now he's out of the labor force. He's what's called a discouraged worker. So what do we do about these people? Well, there is another way of measuring the unemployment rate, and it's a number that has been getting a little bit more attention lately. It's something called U6. U6 is this unemployment rate that brings back into the unemployment numbers these discouraged workers, and it also, and I think really importantly for where we are in the economy now, it includes people who are working part-time but would rather work full-time. So if you're working part-time, you're considered employed in terms of U3, but you would rather have full-time work. Well, with this U6 number, we account for where you would like to be in the labor force. And so that U6 number, contrary to that 5.7 number that came out at the beginning of the month, the U6 number is actually 11.3%. That brings in all the discouraged workers, and it incorporates these people who are working part-time but would rather work full-time.
We're talking with Brian O'Rourke, who is an economics professor at Robert Morris University, about the recently released unemployment numbers and what you were just describing about the way unemployment is counted. When did that start?
Well, we've been counting unemployment like that for a few decades now, but there have been changes in the way we count unemployed and who we count as unemployed. For example, in 1994, there was a change that was made so that if you've been out of work for 52 weeks, or basically you've been out of work for a year, you are dropped out of the unemployment numbers, whether you're looking for a job or not. And the effect of that is to reduce the number of unemployed people, and that makes the unemployment rate look better. There have been other changes.
Kind of misleading, isn't it?
I think it's very misleading, actually. And so the question then comes up regularly is whether or not the BLS is trying to fiddle with the data. The BLS really doesn't have a dog in the fight. I mean, they're doing their job as they are told to do it. Politicians do like to get involved in this. There was for example, in the 80s, there was another change that was made that in one of the ways the BLS calculates unemployment, this sort of secondary measure, it's called the establishment survey, where they, instead of talking to households, they talk to businesses to find out how many jobs there are available. Well, in the 80s, there was a problem because the establishment survey wasn't able to keep up with the creation of small businesses. So they would always underestimate the number of jobs created relative to the current population survey. So what they did to narrow the gap between those two measures was to just randomly add 50,000 jobs. And they still do that. So the establishment survey just has this sort of placeholder of 50,000 jobs. And in down economic times, you wouldn't expect that 50,000 jobs just to be involved in the calculation, but it still is. It's not that they're not keeping up with new job creation. It's just they use that number to kind of balance things out. So yeah, it's really peculiar. And of course, politicians get accused of messing with the numbers all the time. It doesn't matter what political party they're in. If there's a president in the White House from one party, the other party's going to say, hey, you're messing with the unemployment numbers, because that's a number that most people think they understand. If there are more jobs, the unemployment rate goes down. And that's another weird thing about how we measure unemployment. So with all these jobs being created, the unemployment number goes up. How can that be? If we're creating jobs, people are becoming employed, and the number increases. Well, the answer is we get these people who had not been in the unemployment numbers because they'd been discouraged. When they see jobs being created, they re-enter the labor force, and now they're unemployed again. So the labor force goes up, the unemployment number goes up, even though we're creating jobs. And it's really, you look at this number and think, how can we be doing this? This is just a weird way of measuring numbers. And that's one of the reasons why people like the U6 number a little bit better. There's still problems with it, but we don't have that sort of messing around of people, those discouraged workers coming into and out of the labor force.
Are many of the jobs added to the economy part-time and temp positions?
It seems like it now. There was a story came out, I think it was at the end of last week, where Home Depot announced they were going to hire 80,000 new workers. And, you know, that's great, 80,000 new jobs. But for Home Depot, most of these jobs will be part-time or temporary because it's their busy season is in the spring. So not all of those jobs will be permanent. Nissan has been hiring a lot of temp workers in their factories simply because it's cheaper to do it. If they hire them full-time, there are issues, you know, do they have to join the union? If they join the union, then we have to pay them more. But temp workers can come in and not be part of the union, and they can pay them, you know, $10 or $12 an hour less. So, you know, this is another issue with the unemployment number is it a quality job? That doesn't get picked up in the unemployment statistic. Is it a full-time job? That doesn't get picked up in the unemployment number, at least in the U3 number that we typically hear reported.
So what's something tangible people can look at as evidence of the economy being on the upswing?
Well, every number that we hear reported is going to have some problems with it. And in particular, if you look at things from a regional perspective. So for Pittsburgh, we look at these national numbers or even state numbers. And those numbers don't necessarily tell the story of where we live. They tell the story of the nation as a whole. And even then, you know, if you think about surveying 60,000 households for an unemployment number, how many people in that survey are going to be from Pittsburgh? I mean, you'd be lucky to get, I think it would be sort of wildly optimistic to say there are 50 people in Pittsburgh who are part of that survey because they have to survey the entire country. So national numbers are particularly wonky and kind of weird to work with. And if you want to think about things from a regional perspective, they're almost entirely irrelevant. But there are some numbers that give some indication as to what people think is happening. I mean, the U6 unemployment number is a good number to think about. There's a consumer confidence survey that's conducted by the University of Michigan that gives an idea as to what people in people who are out there spending their money on things think about what's going on in the economy. So the consumer confidence number is a good one. Looking at income growth, I think, is a really important number because one of the things we've seen with sort of coming out of the Great Recession is that incomes have been flat to trending downward after you adjust for inflation. If we start to see income growth pick up, I think that would be a really positive sign for the economy. And another thing that I think this is really important based upon sort of how we got into the Great Recession is to look at home buying. In particular, look at whether young people are buying homes. You've got these anecdotal stories of people who, these boomerang kids who go out and then they can't find a job or they can't find something to support themselves, so they move back in with their parents. If young people start buying homes, it's because they have jobs that can sustain a mortgage, and I think that would be a really good signal that would be sent to the economy and the population as a whole that things really are starting to turn around.
Brian O'Rourke is a professor of economics at Robert Morris University. He joins us occasionally to look at the economy. Brian O'Rourke, as always, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. It's been great being here.
And more Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.